Matthew 14:14. And when Jesus went out and saw a great multitude, and he was moved with compassion for them and healed their sick. When it was evening, his disciples came to him saying, "This is a deserted place and the hour is already late. Send the multitudes away that they may go into the villages and buy themselves food." And Jesus said to them, "They do not need to go away. You give them something to eat." And he said to them, "We have here only 5 loaves and 2 fish. And he said, "Bring them here to me." Then he commanded the multitudes to sit on the grass. And he took the 5 loaves and 2 fish. And looking up to heaven, he blessed and broke and gave the loaves to his disciples. And the disciples gave to the multitudes. So they all ate and were filled. And they took up 12 baskets full of fragments that remained. Now those who had eaten were about 5,000 men besides women and children. It is about a year before he is crucified. And Jesus had taken the disciples across the Sea of Galilee for some R&R, some rest and what they thought to be rest and relaxation. They'd been very busy and there had been multitudes of people around them all the time. And I'm sure they were looking forward to some private time with Jesus. And they crossed over the sea. And as they're crossing over the Sea of Galilee, it's only 7 miles wide. And so as they're crossing over the Sea of Galilee, the people could see them. And you'd imagine the people start running around the shore because they're going to a deserted place, we see. They're going to a place that's remote. Doesn't mean a desert because it's all lush around the Sea of Galilee. But it's a remote place that they're heading to. And while they're heading to this remote place, the people are all following and coming around. And by the time they get to the other side, to this area of Bethsaida, there's a multitude of people waiting for them. Not exactly the rest and relaxation the disciples were looking for. If you've ever had that happen where you've had a real busy time, a real hectic time, and you come home maybe to something and you think, "Oh, I'm just going to go home and I'm going to sit in my easy chair and I'm going to relax." And then the phone rings or something happens. You've got to do something. I always just let it go to voicemail. No, tempting though. But here they are, and they're trying to just experience this time with the Lord, and they get there, and there's this multitude of people. What's your reaction when you see that kind of thing? Well, Jesus' reaction was he was filled with compassion. And one gospel says that he saw them as sheep having no shepherd at this point. When Jesus sees the multitude, his heart breaks for their need and he's filled with compassion and he begins to heal them. And Mark tells us that he taught them and Luke adds that he taught them about the kingdom of God. And so you see them, Jesus sort of going through the crowds is the picture, and he's healing them. He's touching people and healing them and telling them of the kingdom and teaching them. And this is going on for quite some time. There's a ministry thing happening here. And so as this is happening, the day is getting on and the disciples come with this great need to Jesus. There's 8,000 to 10,000 people surrounding them and they're all getting hungry. Verse 15 says that they say, "The hour is already late." They figure the Messiah has lost track of time. He doesn't really realize the need here, and so we need to inform him. Let's form a committee and let's go make sure we go and meet with Jesus. He's been so busy healing all these folks and doing, you know, sundry of miracles, and he doesn't realize it's late and these people are hungry, and after all, we're hungry. So they must be hungry. And we don't have enough food. We don't have enough for us. So it must be too late for a miracle. It's getting late in the day. Let's get the committee together to handle this. They had a vote and they decided they would come and tell Jesus, "Look, Jesus, here's what you need to do. You need to tell these people to go away." That's really spiritual, isn't it? These are his top men saying this. Go away. Tell them to go away. Send them away and tell them to go and get some food for themselves. Because after all, we can't take care of this crowd. What are we going to do? They seem to be a bit overwhelmed by this. And it's such a contrast between the way they view people and the way Jesus views people. And I'd ask you that today, one question I'd ask you is, which category do you fall into? Are you one who sees people with a heart of compassion? Or are you one that says, send them away, get them out of here? Let's be honest. Sometimes we're one and sometimes we're the other, aren't we? Even your pastor, I admit, the cell phone rings. Ooh. I don't want to talk to that one. Oh, it wasn't you. It wasn't you. Don't worry. See, we do get overwhelmed with the multitudes of people who have needs. Now, in our world right now, it might not be multitudes of people who have hunger needs physically, but there are lots of hungry people out there, spiritually, emotionally, great needs around us. And the church is a place where they should be able to come and at least have some of their needs met, ministered to them. Now, it is difficult these days, to be honest with you, on the physical realm, because social services and other groups are sending people to the church for help. So we're getting people who call us just off the street and say, hey, we can't pay our mortgage. Can you help us? And of course, we're unable to do that. But wouldn't it be great if we could actually do it? I think that the government actually should turn all the money over to us and let us handle all of it. We couldn't do a worse job, that's for sure. But the disciples' attitude is, let these people fend for themselves. They're hungry, let them fend for themselves. That's not the attitude of Jesus. You know, it's a deserted place. It's a remote place. There's no McDonald's. There's no Burger King. There's not even a Starbucks. And there's hunger in people's lives that they need. They have needs in their lives. They don't know what they are. Some people don't even realize that their hunger is for spiritual things and that man shall not live by bread alone, but every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. But the only thing that will satisfy the spiritual hunger that you have or anyone has is Jesus and his word. It's the only thing. Again, there's emotional needs of people. People are lonely. They have need of companionship. And then there's physical hunger. And these folks were at that point of physical hunger. Jesus tells the disciples and their committee, he says, they don't need to go away. You give them something to eat. You feed them. And the focus is on the you. The emphasis is on you give them something to eat. And Jesus at times will give us impossible challenges when it comes to people. You give them something to eat. It's really something I think that should be written on our hearts. You give them something to eat. You are a distributor. You are a vessel. God has made you that way to go and give people what they need. He's given you the truth. He's written the truth on your heart and my heart. And we have that privilege. We've been given the ministry of reconciliation, reconciling people to God. Jesus says, you give them something to eat. Now, in John, Jesus seeing the great multitude toward him. Now, it's reported in John. By the way, this miracle is recorded in all four of the Gospels. It's the only miracle other than the resurrection that's recorded in all four of the Gospels. So it's one we should definitely pay close attention to. And in the Gospel of John, Jesus sees the great multitude toward him, and he turns to Philip and he says, "Where shall we buy bread that these may eat?" Testing him, it says. He did this to test him, for he knew what he was about to do. I love the way Jesus tests us and tests the disciples. I actually like it when he tests other people. I don't like it when he tests me. I like reading about the tests in here, but when the test is my test, I'd rather not have it. Philip answers and says, 200 denarii worth of bread is not sufficient for them, that every one of them may have a little. Now you can sort of imagine Philip, he's probably sort of an accountant kind of guy. Maybe he went and talked to Judas, who held the money box, and said, "How much money we got in there?" And Judas said, "Oh, there's about 200 denarii. And he started figuring out, okay, can we buy this amount of bread and buy this, and then maybe a little bit of, you know, some side foods, and okay, there's 10,000 people to, it's impossible. I can't do it." Calculating it and figuring it out, he probably was working on that for a while. And things that in the physical realm seem impossible. It's impossible to feed these people on the resources that they were counting. You see, he's trying to account for his resources. And it's impossible. But he had forgot one resource. Jesus. One man said, "Leave Jesus out of your calculations and you'll come up short every time." It's true. They were aware of the need, but they were powerless to meet the need. But standing right in front of them is one who had created the heavens and the earth, one who had all power given to him. So our first step really to be careful with in this passage and in our lives is to not measure our resources, but determine God's will and trust him to meet the need. Where God guides, God provides. God is their provider. And the committee has spoken and they've determined that we don't have enough resources to accomplish the miracle, so I guess we'll just have to send the people away. That's what committees do. There's nothing we can do, they say. Collectively, they decide that nothing can be done. But listen, Jesus is not a committee. Or even a member of most committees. I'm not sure he shows up at committee meetings. Mark tells us that he asked them, "How many loaves do you have? Go and see." And in verse 17 of our text, it says, "We have only here 5 loaves and 2 fish. Now you think of these loaves, and you probably think of like an Italian bakery with great big loaves, right? But it's not what it is. This is just little muffins, like little English muffins. Barley loaves is really what they were. And barley was from the poor people. And so it was just these little loaves. It's just a little biscuit, sort of. John gives us some other details. He tells us that it was actually a young lad's lunch. A young boy who had left home that morning, and mom had probably, you know, told him, you know, "Brush your teeth, comb your hair, get ready, wash behind your ears, and don't forget your lunch." I just have one question. My question is, Andrew's the one that went and brought the lunch to Jesus. My question is, how did he get it from him? Did he wrestle it away from him? Can you imagine, Andrew, "Give me that lunch, you little kid." But then thinking, why would he do it? Why would he steal the lunch from the kid? It's not going to do any good. Maybe the kid offered the lunch. Maybe he was a kind-hearted young boy. Better that it was a boy than an adult, because usually, you know, the adults, he would have just hit it and figured, "I can feed myself. I'm not giving it to anybody else." Unless he was like the fellow yesterday. Did you happen to see what happened yesterday with Derek Jeter? In case you weren't, you didn't know, yesterday, Derek Jeter hit his 3,000th hit. And he did it by hitting a home run into the left field stands. And there was a young man who caught the ball, who got the ball. And instead of like a few years ago what happened with Barry Bonds, one of his home runs, or Mark McGuire, one of them. Anyway, the fans charged $500,000 to give the ball back. And they estimate this ball was worth at least $250,000. This is a 23-year-old guy, cell phone salesman. And he took the ball and he gave it to Derek Jeter. And he said, you know, it's his anyway. And he worked all these years to do what he's doing. I'm just going to give it to him. And then the Yankees gave him a bunch of tickets and free stuff, and that's good. They should give him that. I think Derek should give him $100,000 or something, you know. But he didn't ask my opinion, so. But maybe this guy is like that, you know, that fella. He just has that kind of heart. But now the disciples have this little lunch. They've got 5 loaves and 2 fish. And Jesus says, well, how much do you have? And he tells them, we got 5 loaves and 2 fish. And they probably went, oh, now we're ready for the 10,000 people that are sitting here and are hungry. But there's some things that are just such an incredible blessing within this. Some things that we can see, I think, that are great for us to know. Firstly, as Jesus does this miracle, he is our provider. Jesus wants to provide. God wants to provide for his people. And when people are hungry, he is willing and able to provide their needs. And from a spiritual point of view, he wants to flood you with your needs. Mark again gives us some other detail where he says he commanded them to sit down in groups on the grass. So they sat down in ranks of hundreds and fifties. Now, I try to imagine what this was like. You got the 12 apostles, and they're trying to seat 10,000 people in groups of 50. Listen, when we have a prayer meeting sometimes, and there's even, say, 50 people, and I say, okay, get in groups of 4 or 5. It takes you guys like 15 minutes just to figure it out. So imagine they're going around into the groups and they're saying, get into groups of 50 and 100. And you know, in every single group, in every one, there's a guy. And he's saying, what are we doing this for? And of course, the disciples, they don't have an answer other than the Lord told us to do it. And you know, if there are people or anybody, anything like the people around here today, if you say, well, the Lord told us to do it, they say, well, where'd you come from? You know, they're not gonna listen. So it's gonna be a job. This would have taken a couple of hours probably for them to get them to sit down in groups of 50 and hundreds. You know there's one of those guys in every 50 who are gonna complain. And remember, the disciples hadn't read this chapter. They didn't know the end of the story. They didn't know that Jesus was about to do a miracle. So then they just did this out of obedience. Now they'd seen Jesus do lots of things. So they had some faith probably that, okay, I don't know what he's going to do. Peter, you know what he's going to do? No, Peter's probably like, I don't know, but we better do what he says because we've seen lots of things. And so they start lining them up, getting them in groups of 50, but they don't know what's about to happen. But they do it out of obedience. They know that people are hungry. And they know they have needs. And you know, I know in this room right now that there are people that are hungry. Well, I don't know about physical hunger. You might be physically hungry too. It's getting close to lunchtime. I know how that goes. But you are hungry today. You're spiritually hungry. You're emotionally hungry. You have things going on in your lives, some of you. Probably most of us have something going on in our life. And I want you to know today that Jesus is able to fill your need. Now, I want you to realize, though, remember, it's got to be a need. You know, Jesus isn't into just blessing you because, oh, well, I just want to give you a Mercedes-Benz or something. You know, some people treat it like that. You know, oh, see, Jesus will give you anything you want. All you got to do is name it and claim it. Just receive it, brother. No. It's a need. These folks were hungry. They had a need. This was food for the day. Look at verse 19. He says, he commanded the multitudes to sit down on the grass, and he took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and looking up to heaven, he blessed and broke and gave the loaves to his disciples, and the disciples gave to the multitudes. Now, I was reading a commentary about this, and they were saying how this blessing was not the kind of blessing like we would bless our food. I always crack up at blessing people's food blessings. We know when we were kids, we had a food blessing that we grew up with as in the Catholic Church, you know, and we used to just say it as fast as we could because we were so hungry, you know. And so we had this rote blessing that we'd say, you know. And today, you know, people, you know, sometimes you get, if you give somebody the opportunity to bless the food, they're praying for Aunt Mary and, you know, it's going on, and you're like, I'm hungry. Come on, just finish up, will you? You know. And then, of course, people always say things like, you know, bless this food to our bodies. I don't really know what that means. Does that mean put on the calories when we eat the food? What does it mean exactly? But this blessing wasn't so much blessing the food. This was blessing the Father for the food. And it really, it was probably a Jewish prayer, a familiar Jewish prayer that they would pray that went like this. It went, blessed art thou, Jehovah our God, King of the universe, who bringest forth bread from the earth. That probably was the kind of blessing that he prayed. So as he's praying this blessing, and he takes the loaves and the two fish and looks up into heaven. You can imagine now the whole crowd is seated in groups of 50s and 100s, and he takes it, and he has these five loaves that he could hold all five loaves just in his hands like that. And he's got two small fish, you know, probably little tiny fish, probably smoked fish of some kind. And he's got these little things in his hands. And there's 10,000 people at least looking at him, watching him. And the disciples, they're right on top of it. They're like watching, okay, what's he going to do now? And he starts to take the loaves and he breaks it. And as he breaks it and he gives it to the disciples, he starts breaking off pieces of loaf. Every time he breaks one off, there's another one, and there's another one, and there's another one. And here's a fish, and there's another one, and there's another one, and there's another one right in front of his eyes, right in front of their eyes. It was a miracle right within his hands. The fish are multiplying. The fishing is good that day. And see, in his hands, the Lord will take things and do things that are miraculous if you'll put them in his hands. In fact, that really is so much the center of this passage where it says, we have here only five loaves and two fish. He says, bring them to me. Bring them to me. Whatever you bring to Jesus, he will multiply it beyond all that you could ask for. Bring it to Jesus and it will be used in a powerful way. Whatever you have, bring it to Jesus. Whatever is in your hands, bring it to Jesus. But we only have five loaves and two fish. What if they said, ah, there's only five loaves and two fish, just throw them in the garbage. It's not even worth it. Let the kid have them back, it's a waste. What are these among so many, they say? Bring them to Jesus. Whatever we bring to him, he'll use. Bring what resources you have to Jesus, even if they are few. Even if it's small, bring it to him. But you don't know how bad my need is. You don't know how difficult things are for me. You don't know how bad this need is that this friend of mine has, and I can't help them. Bring it to Jesus. You say, well, but I'm only a construction worker. I'm only a secretary. I'm only a housewife. Who am I? I'm only a shepherd boy with a slingshot and five stones. And he took down a giant. He said to Moses that day, Moses, who made your mouth? I can't talk, Lord. Yeah, who made your mouth? All I have is this staff in my hand. Well, yeah. Throw it down, Moses. I'll turn it into whatever it needs to be. Fill in the blank in your life. I'm only this. And bring it to Jesus. But Pastor Chris, I'm a loser, man. You know, I've been a drug addict. I got nothing to offer. Bring that to Jesus. Our youth leader is the next heroin addict. God's using him. Bring it to Jesus. There's no way when you think of this little boy who left his house that morning with his lunch, there's no way he thought, I'm going out today to feed 10,000 people. It didn't even cross his mind. He just brought what he had, and in bringing what he had, God took it and used it. I'm sure his mom didn't consider that the lunchbox she packed for him would be such a blessing. Imagine the conversation when the kid came home, by the way. Right? How was your day today, Billy? Oh, it was great. Did you eat your lunch? Kind of shared it, Mom. It went pretty far. And he begins to tell the story, and you know, she's like, oh, come on, son. No, really, ask Uncle Moshe. He'll tell you, you know. He was there. Don't underestimate what the Lord can do through willing vessels who will bring things to him. And they ate, it says, verse 20. Look what verse 20 says. They ate and were filled and took up 12 baskets full of fragments that remained. They ate, and the word there, they ate, they were satisfied. They were like glutted. They were filled to capacity, is what that's saying. You get this picture. Jesus is breaking off the bread, putting it out there, taking the fish, putting it out there. He's handing it out there. And they just keep taking and taking and taking. And there's probably people yelling over the disciples, we need 5 more over here, you know. And there's all kinds of commotion going on. And everyone's eating and everyone's partying and having a great time now in the field. It's probably a wonderful celebration that's happening. It's going on probably for, you know, an hour or two. I mean, look what we do at our potlucks. You know, when you get together with people and you eat, do you just eat? No, you stay there for hours. Sometimes in restaurants, they're coming by, you know, do you want more of anything? Please leave, you know, kind of thing. And they're fellowshipping and there's great things going on. And it says that they were filled, meaning they were so satisfied. And listen, when you come and the Lord comes and ministers to you in your need, he will completely satisfy you like nothing else. Like no one else can. He will satisfy you. It's sort of like you have at Thanksgiving dinner. You know how that is. You eat and you eat and you eat. And you think, you know, I've actually thought about it. Like before I go in, I'll say to myself, I'm not going to do it this year. I'm not going to do it. But I always do it. And then at the end of the meal, after you're done, I can never eat another bite the rest of my life. And you go and you take a nap because that's what you do, you know, and the TV's on and football's on and you don't care who wins or you're just totally out of it. And then an hour or so goes by and you start hearing the clanging of the dishes again and the pie is ready and you go for it. It says they ate and were filled. See, when you bring it to Jesus, there's more than enough. And then it says, and there were 12 baskets full of fragments that remained. Whatever you give to Jesus, he will give back to you beyond what you give him. 12 baskets full, not 11, not 13, 12. Why 12? How many disciples were there? 12 disciples. And you know, the thing that's so wonderful in this picture is those that serve the Lord will be remembered by the Lord. Think of what the end of that day must have been like for the disciples. Think about how there they are at the end of the day. They have given out. They have distributed. Now, the disciples are distributors. That's what they are. They're waiters and waitresses. That's what we are. When we serve the Lord, we are waiters and waitresses. It's the Lord's will. It's the Lord's bidding. It's what he's doing. And then we're just kind of like, okay, let me just take this bread and this fish and deliver it to this person. And let me take this blessing over here and deliver it to this person. And that's really all we are. We're distributors. But as they've been blessed, Jesus gives them something impossible to do, preposterous in their own strength. He furnishes the power to multiply the loaves, and the disciples care for the distribution, but they get the blessing. Jesus doesn't even take a basket for himself. And these baskets would have been baskets full that were large enough to carry a day's provision. So they're getting more than anybody. They're being blessed incredibly. He enables them to do it. They face their inadequacy and learn that Jesus is able to cope with any crisis. And imagine what that end of the day was like. Sitting back, giving thanks themselves, and having a little bit of the meal themselves. And as they sat back, just going, oh man, what things he has done. The wondrous works of God. Just dwelling on what just happened before their eyes. We experience this once in a while when we're doing some things in ministry. Even at the end of a day on a Sunday, I feel somewhat this way. But definitely when larger events, like we just did Bridgefest recently. And at the end of the day of Bridgefest, at, you know, all the work was done. Everything was on the truck. Everything's being packed up. We're still at the beach. And I was helping minister to some of the missionaries. And we had 65 missionaries come out from California to help serve at Bridgefest this year. And so we all gathered together at the pavilion in Ocean Grove. And we're standing. And we're just sitting together. We're talking. And I just kind of had them share some testimony about what the Lord had done the weekend of Bridgefest. And that's sort of, I'm sure, how the disciples felt that day. And then we ate pizza. We didn't have baskets full of stuff, but we had pizza. And it was great. And it was just, and that's how the disciples would have felt, I think, at this moment. You know, when you've worked hard and you've served the Lord and you've been diligent in the ministry and God's used your life and you just sort of can take a step back and go, wow, Lord, you're so good. You did exceedingly abundantly above what I could ask or think. I never imagined, Lord, that it would be this great. I never imagined that you would do this much. And you know, they had gone, remember, backing all the way up, they had gone for rest and relaxation, remember? That's what they were traveling across the Sea of Galilee for. They didn't necessarily get the relaxation, but I think they found some rest. The rest that they found was in the dependency on Jesus. To realize that he knows the needs, he provides for the needs, and he's with them. They're learning to be dependent on him. Great lessons for them and for us. Turn over, closing this story, over to John chapter 6. Now, in John chapter 6, the record is there earlier in this chapter of this same story of the feeding of the 5,000. At the end of the day there, Jesus then is ministering to the disciples and talking to the multitudes the next day and such, and this is part of that discourse. Jesus answered them and said to them, verse 26 of chapter 6, we're not going to read through it all, it's a long discourse, but just portions of it. Most assuredly, I say to you, you seek me not because you saw the signs, but because you ate of the loaves and were filled. Do not labor for food which perishes, but for the food which endures to everlasting life, which the Son of Man will give you, because God the Father has set his seal on him. You see, they were pursuing Jesus and following him around because, after all, we ate the loaves and the fish, and man, what a blessing it was. And sometimes that's all that people do, is they just pursue Jesus for the blessing. Give me the blessing, Lord. Give me the blessing. Give me the blessing. But it's not about material blessing. He says, don't labor for food which perishes, but the food which endures to everlasting life. Then, verse 28, they said to him, what shall we do that we may work the works of God? This is a good question that a lot of people ask. You know, how do I work God's works? And a lot of people are trying to work their way to God. Maybe you're visiting here today. Maybe you're not even totally a believer. You're not sure about this whole Christianity thing. And you're thinking, well, I should go to church because I want to work my way to God. I want God to be pleased with me. I love what Jesus says. Verse 29. This is the work of God, that you believe in him whom he sent. That's the work. You can't work your way to God. You can't work your way to impress God. You simply believe on him whom he sent. Verse 30, therefore he said to them, they said to him, what sign will you perform then that we may see it and believe you? What work will you do? Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Isn't the feeding of the 5,000 enough? What work will you do? He's done tons of miracles up to this point already, all around the Sea of Galilee, and they ask him, what work will you do? And then they say, you can't match this. Our fathers ate manna in the desert, as it is written. He gave them bread from heaven to eat. Well, Jesus, you might have multiplied the bread, but we saw the bread. Our fathers said the bread came right down from heaven. It just floated right down there. Next morning it was there. You can't even do what they can do. They're sort of accusing him. And they say our fathers, meaning their ancestors, is what they're saying. Notice what he says. Most assuredly, I say to you, Moses did not give you the bread from heaven, but my Father gives you the true bread from heaven. Me, I'm right here with you. For the bread of God is he who comes down from heaven and gives life to the world. Lord, give us this bread always. He says to them, I am the bread of life. He who comes to me shall never hunger. He who believes in me shall never thirst. Put your trust in me. Be dependent on me. Realize that I am your provision. Divine provision. It comes only from him. Realize that he's the one. Come to the bread of life today. As Jesus spoke to the woman at the well, he said, if you drink of that water, you'll thirst again. But if you drink of the living water, you will never thirst again. As Jesus said in John chapter 7, come unto me and drink. And out of your being, your innermost being, will flow torrents of living water. And he spoke that of the Holy Spirit of God. Come to the divine provider. The one who gave the manna in the wilderness and the bread in the remote place. Come to him. Bring your resources to him. He will provide for you more than you can imagine. He will bless you beyond anything or anyone or any other place. He is the divine provider.